Small
early childhood. Kickstart the brain right there.
Oh, I guess so. My brain's.
We'll call the Senate Tax Committee to order for Monday, March 31st, 2014. Senator Wieger, welcome to Tax Committee. Education, E-12 Supplemental Budget Bill, Senate Bill 767. And Senator Wieger, do we have an A2 amendment? Is this something you wanted to put on before you talk about the bill, or?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I could, over the weekend, staff was going through runs. This is a technical amendment, and we'll address that, but if it could be offered, I would appreciate it.
Senator Marty, the A2 amendment, it looks like it's a clarification of some of the financial lines. Does Mr. Arneson want to tell us exactly what's going on here?
Mr. Chair, members, Bjorn Arneson, Senate Research. So the A2 amendment revises the operating capital equalizing factors for fiscal year 16 and 17. It also establishes a base appropriation you'll see in the last line of the amendment for the early learning scholarships. The revision of the operating capital equalizing factors is a sort of fine-tuning of those factors in order to get the net levies in this division bill to approach zero.
Thank you. Senator Marty moves the A2 amendment. Any questions, members? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A2 is adopted. Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Overall, Senate File 767 appropriates about $41 million for fiscal year 15 and for 16 and 17, double that, about $82 million. I believe there's a couple of key concerns for your jurisdictional review. One, is there an increase in the tax levy? The answer is no. And, in fact, with the amendment, the property tax goes down slightly by $2,000 statewide. So for that threshold question, then we can go to the tracking sheet to show for those levies that increased, but then how we offset it. The second primary area for review, I believe, would be the discussion that's gone on for location equity in the most recent tax bill, of course, that is now law. There were changes. And
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wieger, there is no such thing as location equity anymore.
Right, but with the optional, but the question was raised in an email, did we introduce that concept or did we tamper or readdress it? And the answer is no, it's not in there. And has there been discussion or are there other proposals that are addressed here on that? No, there isn't. So, Mr. Chair and members, for the actual provisions affecting levy, we can go to the property tax tracking sheet. There's a new one that I believe is being distributed now, and I could ask staff to highlight. I believe there's approximately five lines that we would go to.
Members, I have an old, I think it's the property tax tracking sheet with the yellow on it, and everybody has it. Okay, did you
be dated 3/31?
Did you want Mr. Arneson to walk through that, or Senator Wieger? How did you want to? This is the levy impacts, and members, from my recollection of what I was looking at over the weekend, there's an increase in equalization for the operating capital component or the equity component. I don't remember which one it was.
Operating capital.
Operating capital. And then that levy that you gain there with that equalizing is used in a number of other areas, including safe schools for an immediate equity, building lease, and satellite transportation hub. Is that a
Mr. Chair, thing? That's exactly what is done.
So who's going to just walk through that?
Mr. Chair and committee members, on Thursday, the E-12 division recommended passage of the proposal before you, and then it was referred.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
My name is Jay Wilms, fiscal analyst for the E-12 division. It was then referred from full finance on Friday for consideration of the property tax impacts. The bill is a $41.1 million state aid increase with a net zero property tax impact. On the tracking sheet before you, you'll see a number of levy increases with a corresponding levy reduction in operating capital to result in a net zero change. So if you have the property tax tracking before you, it's titled Education Fiscal Year 2014-15 Budget, Property Tax Tracking. We'll start on line 10. And the columns to focus on, you'll see that they have letters A, B, C, D, E, F. The column to zero in on is column C and column F. That highlights the changes for fiscal year 16 and fiscal year 17. So on line 10, the equity change, there's a $952,000 increase in levies in fiscal 16 and $962,000 levy increase in fiscal 17. This is a result of the changes to the definition of equity metro region. Basically, under current law, a district is considered part of the equity region where, based on where their administrative headquarters are located. This change, a district is considered part of the metro region if its boundaries overlap any portion of the seven-county metro.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
So does that mean that basically it's just the collar counties then that are included now? And is that how many more counties is that than the seven?
Oh,
Mr. I didn't catch your last name. I apologize.
Wilms.
Mr. Wilms.
Wilms. Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, it doesn't change the number of counties, but it will add different districts. So it's still the seven-county metro, but it will add a handful of districts as being classified as part of the metro for that calculation.
Senator Rest.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't understand that. they are districts that are not wholly in their geopolitical lines are not wholly within the seven counties. Is that correct?
Mr. Holmes.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, that is correct.
So I'm asking,
Senator Rest,
what are the other counties that these districts go out into? In not where their headquarters are, but what other districts do they go out into? How many are there?
Senator Weaver.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, there's 11 school districts that straddle the metro, and for adjacent counties, I don't have the names of those counties. I can tell you 11 school districts, and we can identify the county.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the reason why I'm interested in that is that there have been a number of proposals coming forward to in other areas to consider the metropolitan area, the 10 counties that the three other counties that border those the seven county metropolitan area, and this in a way, and I'm not saying it's a bad way, but in a good way, it's like a nose under the camel's tent, because now we're talking about districts, school districts that are now in other that spread into other counties, and I think for the future that's important for us to know. So maybe one of the staff can tell us at some other time just what counties now have school districts that are being considered in terms of formulas for the metropolitan equity issue. So that's important to me to know.
Thank you.
And Senator Weaver, perhaps one of your staff members could provide that to the tax committee before this is on the floor.
That'll be done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Sanjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and perhaps to Senator Weaver or anyone else. Can you take me a little bit further down the road on that one in terms of the policy trail? I mean, in the sense that there's a line somewhere out there where certain school districts are included and certain aren't, and why that line?
Senator Weaver.
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, the line was a part of what a previous legislature had enacted in terms of its funding for districts, and the state law was MS 126C.10 sub 24. As a result of that change, a number of school districts that straddled the metro and the non-metro argued that because they had a number of students within the metro that they should be included for the metro equity revenue. Probably the most vocal was Elk River. Senator Kiffmeyer had a proposal, but it affects 10 other districts as well. And they pointed out there's 3,400 students in Elk River that live within Anoka and Hennepin County. It wasn't a large financial consequence, but it was there. And the issue continued to be raised over the past few years, and it's before us now.
Senator Rest.
Thank you. Senator Senjum. I think that piques my interest a little bit more as well. I'd be interested to know not only the counties, but the how many students in each of those districts live in the seven county area, and I'm sure they must have brought that forward as they made the proposals. And I think we mostly think of Anoka and Hennepin and Ramsey, but we're also talking about Carver and Scott County, and that's getting way afield here, I think. So I'm just interested to get a little bit more statistics about how that $1.2 million and I need more information before I think that's a good idea. Just generally, not under the purview of this committee. I understand that. It's just an interest of mine.
Well, and Senator Rest, this is exactly why the bill is here, is to understand what's going on with the levy impacts, where there were levy changes.
Right, and the equity will affect that.
And the equity will definitely affect that. And as I'm looking at this spreadsheet, it's from Bjorn Arneson, SCRFA. I don't see a date. It's the levy change. Mr. Arneson, do you have this in front of you? And so I'm looking at this spreadsheet, and there are a number of school districts that have a pretty significant increase in the total change per pupil pay 2015. Are those the school districts that are impacted by this levy by this equity change?
Mr. Chair and members, certainly some are. Let me, just for the record, indicate that every school district is eligible for general education equity revenue now. The sort of designation of metro region for purposes of general ed equity is a component, sort of subcomponent of equity, such that if a district qualifies for equity revenue generally, if they lie within the what's known as the metro equity region, their equity revenue is increased by a 25% increment. The 11 districts affected particularly are Cannon Falls, Lester Prairie, Northfield, Elk River, Buffalo, Hanover, Montrose, Delano, Rockford, Chisago Lakes area, Le Sueur Henderson, Howard Lake, Waverly, Winstead, and Glencoe Silver Lake. So to more directly answer your question about which districts among those that see net levy increases in pay 15 on the levy change run, certainly some of those districts, all of the districts are obviously on the run. I think probably that the larger increases that you see in pay 15 are attributable to districts that are members of an intermediate school district, or districts that we expect to, for the purposes of safe schools revenue, thank you, or districts that the department and fiscal staff expect to exercise increased lease levy authority, either for instructional space, for example, or in the case of the satellite transportation hub for this remote bus depot.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Aronson. Anything else, members? Do we have an understanding of what's going on with the levy changes that are being bought down with increases in equalizing for the operating capital? And then, Senator Wieger, I don't know, do you have somebody that would walk us through, or would you care to talk to us about the changes you made in Article 1, Section 59, and Article 1, Section 66? These are provisions that were just passed in the tax bill. You made some changes with regard to that school co-location provision.
Mr. Chair, for the provisions for the school and the range, you had the tax consequences for payment and corresponding requirements needed to be included to reflect aid, and that it came to you did part of it with your tax bill, and we, to put the package together for the co-location of a facility, Section 59 addresses that, and I could ask staff to get further in to.
I wonder, Senator Wieger, if we shouldn't have a little more detail about what's going on. Section 59 is a provision that will allow an exemption to the debt levies not to be reduced by more than 50%. Is there somebody there who can? Mr. Arneson?
Mr. Chair and members, so Section 59, Article 1, would provide that a district's debt service levy can be reduced by more than 50% through payments from the Iron Range School Consolidation and Cooperatively Operated School account, or from the Douglas J. Johnson Economic Protection Trust Fund. So under, absent this language, for example, a district's net debt service levy would be, would not be able to be reduced by more than 50%. So such that the district would still sort of retain some, at least partial responsibility locally for debt service, for obtaining debt service revenue. This new language would allow the school account and the Economic Protection Trust Fund to reduce local debt service levies by more than 50%.
And so as monies come in from other sources, the levies will be reduced for these communities?
Mr. Chair, in this case, Section 59 would provide for that, yes.
Thank you. And Mr. Arneson, can you walk us through Section 66? And
So, Mr. Chair, Section 66 relates again to the Iron Range School Consolidation Cooperatively Operated School account. It would require that beginning in fiscal 19, payments from this account would be increased to offset any reduction in debt service equalization aid, otherwise due to districts. So imagine a scenario, Mr. Chair, where the school account, through the action of its governing body, would agree, for example, to offset local debt service levies on a bond schedule. So it's a multi-year schedule. In year three, for example, if property values, in these affected districts changed such that the debt service equalization aid sort of due to that district under existing law would be increased or reduced. This provision in Section 66 would require that payments from the school consolidation account be increased to those districts to offset any reduction in state debt service equalized aid.
So what the impact would be is if their property values were to go down, then they would qualify for this because they would have a debt service equalization aid. It's quite unlikely that that's going to occur.
Mr. Chair, I think it's the opposite. So if their property values were to go up and they would be, they would accrue less debt service equalized aid from the state, this provision would require that the account basically supplement or actually replace whatever debt service equalized aid was being sort of reduced in that scenario.
So as the school district's values go up, their equalized aid would go down, and this account is going, the consolidation account is going to fill the difference.
That's what the new language would provide for.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that explanation of how that works. My question is, what's, and maybe it's not a question for you, maybe it's for someone else, but what, or maybe Senator Wieger, what's specific or unusual about the Iron Range that this particular legislation would apply only to filling that back hole for the Iron Range? Why would it, what's specific about the Iron Range that's not the same for other parts of the state?
Well, Senator Nelson, I think the largest difference is because the mines don't pay property tax that goes to the schools. They pay production tax and occupation tax, and that's the largest industry, obviously, in this where the school district is, and that's the primary difference why this kind of language is bringing forward, and it has to do with the dollars that are flowing out of the occupation tax to the IRRRB that would then go to the school district. What they're dealing with is a stable to declining population. There are needs to consolidate school districts. Communities are really struggling with that. So they're trying to bring three communities together to co-locate a school. We're trying to find some financial help to help them do that. The state has done that in the past through their CNC program, that consolidation combination or whatever it was called. Program. So it's kind of a furtherance of that program, but the difference is here is because the mines don't pay property tax.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
So I'm somewhat familiar with the production tax and how that impacts local property taxes, mm-hmm. but I guess my question is more to the fact that there are certain, this, I, as I understand this provision, Section 66, it has to do with the property values paid by the property taxes paid by the homeowners or the commercial in that particular area. And it just seems to me that this very same thing would apply to other areas in the state as well, regardless of the production tax, because there are areas in the state where property values are declining, and oftentimes those are districts that do need to consolidate, and that is a very difficult decision. And I know we have some special aid to help with that. I don't think it's been used for several years. But so my question is, why are just those property values such that need to be backfilled? I'm thinking there are other areas in the state as well where personal property tax properties would be declining in value, and there would be less tax, or there would be increasing in value in this case, excuse me, and so there would be less levy aid, and so why would other districts not benefit from that same type of backfilling?
And maybe Mr. Arneson can help us in bringing what the consolidation account, what the status of that is that they're accessing. This account that is going to be used to backfill the reduction in equalized aid, what is the status of that account?
Mr. Chair, members, the school consolidation account, you'll recall, was a provision in the recent tax bill, and proceeds from that account would allow, there are a number of allowed uses, and I apologize, I haven't got the text of the tax bill in front of me. Perhaps one of your staff can offer more detail. The allowed uses would include repayment of repayment of building debt, for example. So in the case, Senator Nelson, where a district may choose to cooperatively operate a secondary facility under the provisions in the E-12 bill, the school consolidation account would provide some funds to help sort of bridge that structural gap between operating separate secondary facilities and one cooperatively operated facility. You alluded earlier, Mr. Chair, to the fact that also in the E-12 bill there's enhanced revenue for schools that are consolidating in terms of the time period over which those districts can access the state aid for consolidation transition and an increase in the per pupil allowance for consolidation transition aid.
And do you need more? I see Mr. Sukmanik is there, or maybe.
I can follow up offline. I see we have a thick packet here today, but I'm just not clear yet why this would not be beneficial to other parts of the state as well.
Sure. Senator Nelson, should I bring Mr. Sukmanik up?
Yeah, I think maybe others would have that question too. Sure. I think it's something important for us to realize. I'd appreciate that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gary Sirkvenik. I represent the school districts of Mount Airn and Buell, which is a consolidated district, Eveleth and Gilbert, which is already consolidated, and Virginia. And Senator Nelson, I'll try to answer your question from looking at what is happening in these communities. There's 8 cities, 7 townships, 4 unorganized townships for a total area of 453 square miles. The average daily bus run is 2,800 miles, to give you an example of the distances and the communities we're talking about. These communities are surrounded by taconite plants, and there are 3 major taconite plants immediately adjacent to these communities where the schools are. Those schools have been impacted by taconite mining. The school, my hometown school, in fact, Mount Airn High School, is located immediately adjacent to the largest taconite mine in North America, U.S. Steel's plant. And that building has been substantially damaged by blasting near the taconite formation. And so the idea here is to move that school, shut it down, demolish it, shut down a facility in Eveleth Gilbert, shut down a facility in Virginia High School, and build a new facility in a centrally located area, so dropping from about 800,000 square feet of 7 through 12 space to about 315,000 square feet. So reduction in size and operating efficiencies, and the new building then would be located for 7 through 12 communities, but allow the independent school districts to continue operating their grade school facilities in their respective towns. So that's the overview. The communities, again, is surrounded by 3 taconite plants which pay no property taxes. And what has been set up is some of their production tax money will go into a Iron Range school construction and consolidation account. So communities that are deciding to join together, reduce operating costs, become more efficient, and at the same time increase curriculum opportunities for students would be able to access some of that funds as an incentive for the communities to build new facilities. The idea of this backfill is that when the communities go out for a bond, they know for certain over the period of the bond, this is how much that community's tax bite will be. And if it drops equalization aid, this fund of property tax in lieu of property tax payments generated in the local community would be used to pay that. So I think specifically because our mines, which are valued very high if they were assessed, we wouldn't have a problem because property taxes and 99% of the money for a new school would come from that mine. In this case, we're setting up a fund that other schools throughout the entire taconite tax relief area, which is 7 counties in size, can take an opportunity to help levelize property tax in case of a school construction program going forward in those districts.
Senator Nelson.
Well, thank you. That's a good history lesson. I appreciate that. And I've been to some of the schools in the taconite relief area, and the ones I've been to are very beautiful, very wonderful, and maybe I've not seen the one that you're mentioning. But I do understand how difficult those consolidations are. I just have one more question. Are you facing a declining enrollment?
Mr. Sirkvanik.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, actually, we've had substantial declining enrollment in all three of these districts. The Mount Airy district, for example, was over 100, and now it's at 28 graduating class per year. To give you an example, Virginia was over 300, 98 next year. But in the next 6 years, their projected total increase in enrollment is about 160. So they'll go from about 1420 to a little bit over 1500 as combined school districts, grades 7 through 12. So it's turning around a little bit. There's a little bit of an increase over the next 6 years. But in general, we've had declining enrollments, poorer students, higher incidence of free and reduced lunches, poorer property values in the region.
And Mr. Sirkvanik, remind me, you're going from how many square feet of school space down to a much smaller number? That's an indication of the number of students that you're servicing. But what was that square footage number again?
Mr. Chairman, it was about 800,000 square feet in the combined districts dedicated to 7 through 12 grades. And now we'll go down to about 315,000, 7 through 12.
So less than half.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair,
Senator Nelson,
one final comment. So I understand the issue here, I believe. The piece I don't really understand is how the fact that the mines pay production tax instead of property tax make this particular provision beneficial to the Iron Range and not to the rest of the state. I do believe there's other areas that are other parts of the state that are facing declining enrollment that need to consolidate and whose property values also could benefit from perhaps the same type of treatment.
And Senator Nelson, I think there has been an account that has benefited school districts doing that. I know, for example, my home school district of Clearbrook and Gonvick, they were two school districts, you know, they're 4 miles apart, those towns. But they went through what was called the C&C, which was cooperate, consolidate, I believe. And they received state dollars to help them go through that process of closing, you know, old antiquated school buildings and, you know, building a new building and, you know, bringing their two schools together. And you know, I have a lot of, I know that the communities that are working on this, it's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of emotion involved in that. I think back to some of the community angst over losing the school, and it's a pretty substantial effort. And so if the state can be helpful by relieving some of the financial issues, I think it's an effort worth doing, particularly in these rural areas. But that... Anything else, members, on this part of it? No. Senator Wigger.
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank Senator Nelson for pointing out there's additional needs in the state. This was a matter of educational survival, the viability of some area districts, and we have, as you know, Senator Nelson serving on the Education Committee, have just received a very exhaustive report with a number of remedies from the Department of Education on school facility needs. I would expect next session and a budget year we'll look at a number of those recommendations, which could certainly address what we talked about. And Mr. Chair, on reference for the mining industry, I believe most of you know that the Permanent School Trust Fund, which is heavily contributed to by the mines, provides $30 right now per student in the formula going to all students throughout the state. The corpus in that fund is at $1 billion and growing.
Did you ask about Section 66?
Yes. Senator West?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the dates on that, 2019 and 2018, don't show up on any spreadsheet, right?
Mr. Senator Ress, no, those would not be on our spreadsheet because the impact of that would be 2019, but it would also be somewhat speculative depending upon what the property value of the school district is as to what the impact would be.
So that is a provision of interest, it seems to me, because it's so uncertain. And
There you go.
Anything else, members? Everybody understand the levy impacts? Senator Wicker, this bill is going back to the Finance Committee?
Yes.
I hope. Anybody else wish to testify on Senate File 767? Seeing none, Senator Rest moves Senate File 767, first engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee. Seeing no further questions, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Bill's passed. Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair, and we'll follow up promptly on Senator Rest's concerns.
Questions? Senator Clausen. Welcome to the Tax Committee, Senator Clausen.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to meet with you this morning. Senate File 2884 relates to a permanent sales tax exemption on school tickets and admission sales. Currently, admissions and tickets to games, events, and activities sponsored by the Minnesota State High School League are exempt from sales tax for sales made after June 30, 2006. The statute was scheduled to sunset on June 30, 2011. However, the exemption was extended to July 1, 2015. And Senate File 2884 removes the sales tax exemption sunset clause, making the exemption permanent. Minnesota State High School League directs high school extracurricular activities in our state and is one of the leading associations in the country. The High School League board membership is comprised of school representatives from throughout the state. In addition, four members are appointed by the governor and two by the Minnesota School Boards Association. The league is annually audited by the Minnesota State Auditor and reports on its activities to the Commissioner of Education. The Minnesota State High School League annually calculates the amount of sales tax to be paid to the state and transfers that amount to the Minnesota State High School League Foundation. The foundation distributes funds to member schools via grants for special projects that support high school activities. And I'd like to turn your attention to the handouts, which provide information on the foundation and league board of directors, and also the board of directors foundation membership. And with us today is Mr. David Stead. He's the executive director for the Minnesota State High School League, and I'd like for him to provide some testimony.
Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Dave Stead. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota State High School League, and I would like to thank the legislature for allowing us to provide a foundation to support the member schools in Minnesota. Since 2007, we've been able to collect the sales taxes on the postseason tournaments. During the regular season, our member schools are exempt from paying taxes, but we had to pay taxes during the postseason. So those dollars were provided by the legislature to be able to go back to the Minnesota schools. The purpose of the foundation is to promote and to fund and to provide opportunities for people, number one, who, because of financial issues, may not be able to pay participation fees in different school districts. In addition to that, providing some grants to extend opportunities throughout school districts in Minnesota. It's been a tremendous opportunity for us to return dollars to our schools, and we certainly thank you for the support that you provided in the past and certainly hope that that support will continue into the future as well.
And so if this Senate File 2884 becomes law, when the state tournament is held at the Target Center or XL, there would be no sales tax remitted to those events? Is that the impact of this?
Mr. Chair, currently the sales tax on each of the postseason tournaments, whether it be a game that's played in Bemidji, a game that's played in Dasso-Cocado, wherever that tournament may be played, any ticket that is sold, the sales tax is remitted directly to the foundation. That would be the same thing true at the Excel Center, the Target Center, the University of Minnesota, wherever those contests may happen to be. So certainly there's a figuring. We take whatever the sales tax is paid on those tickets, and that money then is directed specifically to the foundation.
Currently, the regular season games are not taxed, but all postseasons are?
That is correct. That's current legislation right now, yes.
Questions, members? I see the Department of Revenue has a revenue note here. It's like $1,600,000 over the next biennium.
It's a huge number.
That's what I thought.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
That's a huge number. That's like $7 million in sales, Senator Clausen. Is that really how much revenue comes in from the ticket sales in postseason?
And Mr.
And I'm assuming this has it's not, you know, invitational events during the season or anything like that. I don't know whether they how many of those they have, but we're only talking about postseason events. Is that correct?
Senator Clausen.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, yes, it's postseason play, and we have Mr. Rich Matter, Director of Finance for the Minnesota State High School League, and he certainly could provide additional information if you'd like.
Mr. Matter, if you would talk about that and state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator it's not Rest. Million, it's $780,000.
For the biennium, it would be $1.5 million for the two-year time period.
Okay. I see. But not a year.
No, not a year.
Okay.
Mr. Matter, what is the annual ticket sales?
Mr. Chair, I'm Rich Matter with the finance director with the Minnesota State High School League. Annual sales tax is the approximately $770,000, $1.5 million for the biennium. State ticket sales are approximately $10 million, but of that $10 million, $770,000 annually is the sales tax on that $10 million of ticket sales.
And so the $10 million, kind of average ticket price, and how many people then?
Yeah, average ticket price for section tournaments out state are approximately $7 for an adult ticket. At the state tournament at Target Center, Excel Center, average ticket price would be approximately $12 for an adult ticket.
So, Senator Rest.
And so the amount of postseason ticket sales is $10 million.
Mr.
Matter.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And yes, it's approximately $10 million in ticket
sales. And Mr. Chairman, Senator sir, Rest. That what is the ticket sales for non-postseason, just the annual.
Mr. Matter.
Mr. Chair, committee, I don't have the regular season ticket sales. We do not track that. That would be at the local school district level, and we do not track that for regular season. We
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Reston, Mr. Matter, if you could pull the mic in just a little bit.
So how does that break down by sport? And I imagine that some of the things that would be covered don't charge anything because they don't charge anything.
Mr. Matter.
Mr. Chair, committee. Yes, that is accurate. Right now, hockey in Minnesota would be our largest ticket revenue event. We only pay sales tax on events that do charge admission. So for events that are there's no admission, we do not charge sales tax.
So, Mr. Chairman, so that's mostly athletic contests. Is that correct? So the big sports?
Mr.
Just name them, if you would, that charge
Mr. Matter.
For
Mr.
tickets Chairman. Postseason.
Yeah, our top five revenue producers would be hockey, football, boys and girls basketball, and wrestling would be our top five tournaments that produce revenue.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Klassen.
Just to elaborate on Senator Rest's question, the High School League also sponsors fine and performing arts activities.
No, I know
and,
that.
And
yeah.
Many of those, there is no admission that is charged.
But they don't have contests at the end of the year, Mr. Chairman. Senator Klassen.
State speech.
Senator Klassen.
Mm-hmm. But they don't charge for those.
No.
Anything else, members? Senator Senja.
Ms. Chair and Senator Klassen or either of the witnesses. So if we don't pay sales tax, where does that is that to the advantage of the High School League then, and they keep the money or?
Mr. Chair, Senator,
Mr. Steed.
The money comes into a Minnesota High School League Foundation, and those dollars go directly back to the member schools.
Okay.
The theory is that during the postseason play, people who attend the events, who support the teams in those particular tournaments, provide tax dollars. We, in turn, take those tax dollars and return them to the member schools throughout Minnesota through two different ways. One of them is simply a grant each fall of the year when school districts send information to us about the participation levels that they have. And the second way is for the foundation to be able to accept grant requests and return dollars to the member schools. So that if we collect $750,000, for example, probably $730,000 will go directly back to the member schools. Less than 1% of the dollars that are collected are used for administrative purposes in our offices to be able to gather the information, to make sure that we pay for the board members who come in, to administer the cost and send it back. I think oftentimes in large nonprofit corporations, 25% to 30% of the administrative cost is not unusual. In the case of the High School League, it's less than 1% of those dollars. And so we don't keep those dollars. We simply administer the opportunities for those programs. If you look at the handout that's there, you can see over the period of time the number of dollars that have been collected, the number of dollars that have been returned to schools. And so for the past 6 years, we have returned $4.7 million back to member schools to help students participate who aren't able to pay participation fees, to help grants programs, to help them purchase AEDs from safety standpoints, and also to provide training for coaches, activities directors as well.
Mr. Steed, though, so of the $10 million that you paid in ticket prices, 1% is administrative fees, but there has to be a lot of other costs that are coming out of that. $10 million. So, out of the $10 million, how much goes back to the schools through the foundation?
Mr. Chair, the $10 million would be overall for all of the tickets that are sold. What we're talking about is a $750,000 that will go directly into the foundation. It's those dollars that less than 1% administrative cost is there as well. In addition to that, because of the ticket sales that we have, we sponsor 36 different activities as far as the High School League is concerned. Only 14 of those activities provide any revenue, positive revenue. The rest of them are all an expense. And so the total budget then will administer the programs for all of the programs that we have in Minnesota. We average, again, about $750,000 returned to the member schools of the High School League based on their participation in games throughout the postseason tournament play.
Oh, I see. So this is part of 128C.
Correct. 128C, correct.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
I'm still trying to understand the revenue estimate. The tax that's collected goes to the state. The tax goes back into the foundation itself?
Yes, Senator Rest.
I understand that.
Senator Rest, 128C is the High School League determine the sales tax savings attributable to this section and annually transfer that amount to the nonprofit charitable foundation created for the purpose of promoting. So all of the sales tax that they would be saving would be transferred to the foundation.
Okay, I see that. But that would be in the future then. I mean, right now, the $780,000 comes to the state.
Comes to the general fund, yes.
Yeah, okay. That's what I was confused
no.
about.
No.
My further question, Senator, Mr. Chairman, is are ticket prices then going to be reduced by this $770,000, or Are they going to stay the same? How will ticket purchasers, how will they see a difference on the total price they pay for the ticket? If they pay $7.50, it includes the tax, will they now pay $7 for a ticket? Or will the ticket prices stay at, and this is just hypothetical, or will they stay at $7.50 and the ticket purchasers eat the tax?
Senator Rest, let's get the answer to the money goes first, and then we'll get the answer if the ticket price is going to go down. Ms. Pollack or Ms. McQuay? Ms. McQuay?
Senator Rest, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, if you look at the first bullet on the revenue estimate, the exemption has been in place since 2007. So the High School League has not been paying the sales tax. So it's not been going to the general fund since 2007. And so
I get it now. Okay, that part. Okay.
And Senator Claussen, with regard to whether the ticket prices are expected to go down or stay the same.
Mr. Chair, members, the ticket prices for the High School League are determined annually by our Board of Directors, and they have been static for the last 4 years. As we take a look at the venues in which we have our teams participate during state tournaments, venue costs continue to increase. We try to keep the ticket prices down as low as we possibly can. Mr. Matter indicated the average cost of tickets during the state tournament at the Target Center and the Excel Center may be in the $12 range. For adults, for example, those numbers have been consistent for about the last 4 years. Prior to that, they were significantly lower. And our goal is to try to keep the dollars as low as we can to encourage parents and others to bring their children to come to the events. And so we'll continue to monitor that based on what our costs are. Our costs at the different venues that we go to, whether it's University of Minnesota, the Target Center, or the Excel Center, which are wonderful facilities for our teams to play in, those costs continue to escalate for us very significantly. And no matter how we try to negotiate, we don't have the same opportunities that concerts have to come to negotiate against the Target Center and the Excel Center. So we pretty much have to take whatever the fees are that they charge us, and those costs continue to go up. However, we've been able to continue to keep those ticket prices as low as we possibly can and still provide good opportunities for our participants.
Thank you, Mr. Seed. Senator Rest.
So if the exemption, I understand that now, it's not a new exemption, it's continuing an old exemption.
On too.
Yeah, sorry about that. And is there a sunset on this in this bill, or is this now you're proposing it to be permanent? And then secondly, so now for FY 2016, the revenue estimate is $830,000. So will the foundation now refund back to or make a transfer back to school districts based on the revenue estimate, not of $750,000, but of $830,000? Do you annually ask the revenue department for an estimate of that, and how do you determine what goes back?
Mr. Matter.
Mr. Chairman, committee, yes, we've been giving back, as Mr. Stead talked about, all dollars back to schools except approximately 1% of the total. And so, yes, if it goes up from $770,000 to $830,000 in 2016, I would anticipate that the foundation would give back all $830,000 back to member schools.
And so, Mr. Chairman and sir, so you do that on a look back on what the actual tickets sold in whatever it's a fiscal year, a calendar year. You look at the number of tickets, what the gross revenue was, and then you just multiply the whatever the sales tax rate is, and it's that amount of dollars that, according to some formula, are allocated back to the school districts from the foundation. Do I have that right now?
Mr. Chair,
Mr.
Senator,
Matter.
That is correct.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Claussen, is this an extension or is it a permanent exclusion?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Claussen.
Senator Rest, this would be a permanent exemption.
Thank you.
Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Chairman. I thought it might be interesting for you to just to learn where exactly this money goes. And when I was a high school principal, we had two grants. One of these was for our entire school district, Rosemont, Apple Valley, Eagan Public Schools. So you're talking about four large high schools. And we did a Saturday training and follow-up with all the captains on leadership. And so we asked for a grant to support that endeavor. Another one was with prevention. Again, we combined with our region, so we had several schools that were involved in a multiple phase of meetings that we had, again, working with team captains about chemical prevention in their programs. So those are just two concrete examples of some of the grants that are distributed.
Anything else, Senator Sanjan?
Mr. Chair, I don't want to belabor this bill any further, nor the witnesses, but I would be interested at some point, maybe Ms. Quay can help, whether or not, you know, the high school and our K-12 system are creature of the state, but so are our Minsky facilities. Do they have a program like this? And we don't need to answer that today, but I'd be curious.
Yeah, oh, interesting. I would be curious also. Anything else? Anybody else wish to testify on Senate File 2884? Seeing no further questions, Chair will lay Senate File 2884 over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Claussen. Thank you, testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Members, Mr. Chair, members, thank you.
Thank you. Members, on Thursday, we heard of two bills that were referred to us from other committees. I would ask that we would move those two bills to the floor. They are moving separately in the House. We held Senator Jensen's Senate File 2399 over because it actually raises a small amount of revenue, but we will continue to track that. So, members, if we could move Senate File, Senator Rest moves Senate File 2399 as amended.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Can you explain what you mean by you're going to track the revenues? You're going to try and separate them and hold the financial portion over?
Senator Ortman, I'm not going to hold it over, but if it does generate it's a small amount of revenue, we would have to carry that on our spreadsheet as revenue that would be generated if this becomes law.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, it's $20,000 in PTR interaction with lowering the levy. That's what it is. Well,
Senator Ortman, it's the elimination of that hospital levy for, I can't remember the name.
Jackson.
Of the for Owatonna. And because we eliminate the levy, there's, I think it's $20,000 a year of PTR savings.
Mr. Chair, I'm not questioning the nature of the bill itself. I'm just wondering why it isn't being included in a tax bill if it has a revenue impact.
Well, Senator Ortman, that was my original thought. It's moving separately in the House. I thought that if there was a chance that the House would send that bill over, we should be prepared. I don't want to hold this up for Senator Jensen, and you never know how tax bills are going to go around here. So I thought maybe with that small revenue impact, it would be okay to send it up to the floor.
Well, we'll watch for it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
It'll still have to be even separately passed in the House first.
Yeah, it would still have to pass. So Senator Rest moves Senate File 2399 as amended. Be recommended to pass and referred to the Senate floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion avails. Bill's passed. And then we had Senator Dahl's Clear Lake Area Water and Sewer District. This is a bill that dealt with sewer connections where they were using some of their revenues to pay for the sewer connections. It doesn't have any revenue impact for the tax committee. It is moving separately in the House. So I thought we should send that to the floor also. And that is Senate File 1958. Senator Rest moves Senate File 1958 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Any questions, members? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Bill's passed. Thank you, members. We have a full schedule coming up this week. Tomorrow, the full committee will meet Senator Saxog's 2709, Senator Sparks 2505, Senator Kent 2254, Senator Rosen, 2714. Senator Coonan has two bills, 2293 and 2781. And then a Senator Eakin bill dealing with a border state study that is a new bill introduction. I don't have a number on that. That will be Tuesday's agenda. Senator Rest, do you have information on Wednesday?
No, I think members have been emailed the
informed. So the division is meeting on Wednesday.
I think it's we're meeting at 8:30. We have a long agenda.
And members, we're starting at 9 o'clock tomorrow. Anything else? Seeing none, the committee's adjourned.